Mainstream Mental Health Radio with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something?
Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time, discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thanks very much for listening, as we really do appreciate it. We have another fantastic show for you today, and a great guest coming up, and Dr. Gayani Da Silva. Looking forward to talking to her about how to talk to your kids about prejudice. Anyway, I'd like to ask you to follow us at our website at mainstreammentalhealth.org, and then let your friends know about our show and have them listen to us at podcast on iTunes at blogtalkradio.com/mainstreammentalhealth. All right, well, he did it. Dylan Roof got sentenced to death in Charleston Church Massacre. He presented his case, which he did not present any defense. He made statements about having the psychological pressure to kill these individuals, and then made statements about not, in his mind, being mentally ill, and that he is competent. And as he made his closing statements this past week, he said, you know, my confession to the FBI, I told them that I had to do it. And obviously, that's not really true, he said. I don't have to do anything. Roof said that he made his own five-minute closing argument in the penalty phase of the federal trial. And he said, what I meant when I said that was I felt like I had to do it. And I still do feel like I had to do it, period. The prosecutors then argued that he's a calculating killer who deserves the death penalty because of his motive or his lack of remorse and the shooting's impact on the victims' families. Now it's hard to think of the impact on Dylan's family because, of course, he's the perpetrator of this, but this had a global reaching effect, just not with the families also, but with the community. And then Dylan's own family. This is quite tragic. I think, you know, the outcome of the death sentence is going to be a long, drawn-out process. It's probably going to be 20 years or more before we see that. Again, he's going to have to go through multiple appeals. And ultimately, I think the jury came to the right conclusion with the information that we know right now today. Anyway, as we move along, there's some new research coming out of the UK, and it talks about young people having so many emotional problems that they can't focus. Now, I started my career as a school psychologist, and I worked with a lot of kids from a lot of different ages, all the way up through young adulthood, and now I'm working with geriatrics as well. And what I see in adolescents today is that they are troubled, and their troubles, you know, are not what mom and dad's troubles are in most cases. Granted, there are some of these kids that are going through and suffering from abuse and neglect and things like that. But a large majority of them are struggling with normal, everyday kid problems that they don't have the skills to manage. And that becomes problematic, you know, and we talk about, you know, child's play and children and things like that. And it's a real thing. It's their life. And as we develop skills in youth, we learn to communicate and share and express our feelings. Well, with the advent of smartphones and tablets and texting and all these online social media, a lot of our children aren't learning those skills. And I think this study is bearing that cost right there. This is what it's costing us. And so many of our kids don't have the skills to communicate what they are feeling because they're not in tune with communicating. You know, of the ones that are suffering, almost 60% of those, I think it's 56% of those, are not believing that anybody will be able to help them at all. And you know, as we look at this, you know, this is more than just ADHD type stuff. These are kids who are feeling isolated. You know, they're not getting the reinforcement on the social media that they had before. These kids are feeling it across the board too. It's not just school; it's home life. And if we look at this, you know, the study even comes out and states that they believe that mental health is at its lowest level since they started monitoring this in Great Britain. And I tend to concur. I think this is what's happening right now. I think as we move forward with our schools, you know, the old school model, you know, you stand up in front of the class and you write on the chalkboard and you talk to the class and they talk to you and the teacher helps you, steps you through this. As much of a struggle and a difficult situation that was to be in front of everybody, we have to move forward with the new technology and realize that our teachers are sending things home. They're having to watch things online and focus that way. So I think some of our new modern techniques are actually contributing to this as far as teaching is concerned. The last thing I'd like to talk about today before our guest comes on is psychopathy and social media. And before we get into that, I'd like to remind everyone that you are listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show, and my name is Dr. John Huber. All right, according to research from Ohio State University, we are seeing that a lot of famous celebrities, football players, and anyone who takes excessive numbers of selfies for social media, well, they're more likely to exhibit psychopathic and narcissistic qualities than people who don't do that. The study used online surveys to investigate this dark triad of personality traits, and they looked specifically at psychopathology, self-objectification in American men age 18 to 40, and using social media and visual self-presentation, what we would call selfies. Well, what they found out was that a lot of people are posting selfies out there, and one of the big things that they found out was that the men who went in and took the selfie and then they used filters and they photoshopped and made themselves look the prettiest, those individuals tend to be much more narcissistic and self-objectified. The ones who would just take the selfie and post it, and they did it continually without filtering, without trying to put their best foot forward, those individuals actually tended to be much more psychopathic and display signs of psychopathy, which is kind of an interesting thing to note. So we need to think about that as we're posting our selfies. And I'd like to move on now and remind you one more time that you're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio. Again, my name is Dr. John Huber. And with all these selfie things and socialization that we have and the social media that's limiting our socialization, the reports on these children that are being left behind because they're not able to express their emotionality, we also see a lot of bias in our kids' attitudes. They're being manipulated in a lot of situations, and some of it is kind of shocking to us. It comes out as being prejudice, and I think it's difficult to talk to kids about prejudice, even my own kids, and recent events that we've seen have left many, many Americans, especially our youth, frightened, angry, and divided. So how do we as parents talk to our kids? You know, when they're frightened, talk to them about the violence that's going on, the prejudice, the acts of media just inundating us with these images all the time. And what I'd like to do today is invite our guest, Dr. Gayani Da Silva, and she's a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and she has an upcoming book coming out, A Psychiatrist's Guide to Helping Parents Reach Their Depressed Tween. Dr. Da Silva, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Dr. Huber. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you. So do you really think that the Internet is impacting the way our kids are growing up so fast with all this racial prejudice being inundated on their media?
Yeah, you know, I think the Internet just gives them so much information and so much access to all sorts of ideas and beliefs and examples and role models. And when we talk about prejudice and racism, I think we have to remember that those kind of ways of thinking are not inherent to children. You know, they're not born racist or prejudiced or biased.
Right.
They learn these things from their environment and the people who they look up to. So they can really learn this these kind of thinking ways from parents, from teachers, from peers as they grow older, but not really when they're young. When they're young, they're really learning from the adults around them, and they're mimicking,
right,
and they're having discussions with their peers about what they've seen and maybe what is happening in the home, but they're not really learning that prejudice and that racism from their peers.
Well, how does a parent then address that? I mean, a lot of times, you know, being a parent myself, you know, we don't always know when our kids are being exposed to this. So is this something we should just bring up on our own, or should we wait for something like this or an instance to come up? How do we go about that?
I think there are multiple things that parents can do. I think the first thing parents can do is to raise their own awareness of the ways that they are prejudiced or that they are racist. Because we all have them, because we're all, you know, we grow up in this society, and there's prejudice and racism all around us. And so it's impossible to avoid becoming conditioned to some of those ways of thinking and ways of behaving. So I think that parents first need to look at themselves and say, you know what, I probably have some prejudice, and I probably am racist in some ways, and I need to be aware of this, and I need to think about what I'm saying. Are my jokes truly compassionate? Are my jokes truly equitable to people? And then with that eye and that mindset, and with the intention of being kind and compassionate to not only ourselves but to our children and to the world beyond, then look at our children and say, you know, when they say things, usually, again, they're mimicking or mocking or repeating what they've heard, we have to tell them, you know, hey, what did you just say? Did you just make a statement about someone? Can you explain that more to me? Where does that come from? Why do you think that? It sounds like a very racist statement that you're making. And, you know, kids at younger ages may not understand what that means, and so we have to explain to them what racism means. You know, racism
well,
is...
Well, and I think there's some differences, too. I mean, racism, stereotyping, and I think the worst one is actually discrimination. Stereotyping actually is a lot of how our cognitive framework works, so we can make quick decisions, everyday decisions. Even in my practice, you know, we have the DSM, and we have to basically stereotype. There's criteria you meet and you fit into this box.
That's how our brains fit people into compartments and into boxes so we can understand them more easily.
Right. So stereotyping in and of itself isn't bad. It's how we use it, I think. And that leads us to the discrimination. And we have to be very conscious about our own discrimination and are we actually doing that? You know, and it comes down even, like you said, to our jokes, to our humor. At what point are we doing some kind of hyper censorship, and at what point are we no longer really making a joke and we are, you know, putting somebody down?
Right. I think that we do approach naturally people in terms of trying to fit them into a category that we already know about. But then I think that we need to teach our children and encourage them and encourage ourselves to look beyond that, that people are individuals, that we can evaluate them and assess them and, judge them for who they actually are and what they mean to us in a specific interaction. And our brains can certainly do that, right? We although we do have these kind of Venn diagrams or these groupings of people, we can certainly get more. Our brains are so much more complicated and powerful, and we can certainly delve deeper and see people for who they actually are and for all of their complexities. And children can do this.
They can do this,
and they can learn how to do this. We can start to help them develop these critical ways of thinking at a very young age. We don't have to wait until they're adults to start thinking more critically.
Exactly.
And we can do this because this helps, you know, this helps children not form those stereotypes and not stick to those prejudices, and it helps them become more active, active thinkers rather than more passively becoming racist or prejudicial or biased.
And I think as they become aware that, stereotyping is a natural process, what we have to do then is actually become aware of our stereotypes and how we group things and keep ourselves from using that inappropriately against anybody.
That's right, and continue to reevaluate and reform what those stereotypes are, and to remind ourselves that these are just guidelines to help us put a framework around how we think. We don't have to use them as a hard and fast rule when we apply this to our daily life and our situations. And kids, you know, they look at us, they look at adults, and they match and they practice what we show them. So we really have to be very cognizant about what we say and how we behave whenever we're around children.
And then that kind of leads us to our social arena, you know, once we step outside of our family, you know, and the whole political correctness, you know, how that, you know, because that can be problematic in itself. I mean, we want to try and protect people, but at what point are we, you know, ignoring some critical things that should be addressed?
Yeah, I mean, I think political correctness is also a generalization, right? And
they're
kind of rules that we make for ourselves. And so, again, I think that what we need to do is, as parents, is teach our children, hey, let's think about this. Let's go beyond just what you've heard. Let's go beyond the superficial. Let's think about what do you really feel about this? What do you really think about so-and-so? What are you seeing out there on social media? What is that Facebook post? Does that even make sense to you? Does that make sense to you according to your life experience? Does that make sense to you according to what you know and the knowledge that you have about social science and politics and the world? And have them question everything that they hear and see and think.
And that's what it's about, not just accepting. Think about it. Question.
Yes.
And draw your own conclusions. So that kind of goes...
Yes, we always want to be thinking about their cognitive development.
Exactly. So... You know, a lot of our kids are impacted by celebrities, musicians, singers, rappers. And I know, you know, with my kids and who they listen to and some of them who I try to filter who they listen to, are there any particular ones out there you think could maybe change their presentation a little to maybe – have more of a positive impact on this? Because I know there's several out there that are actually pretty negative in how they present their art, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, there's so many out there who I think that, you know, they're expressing their own feelings and their life experience, and I think they forget that children are a huge part of their fan base. And so as they vent their feelings, you're forgetting what the impact might be on children. And I think children also, as they hear these lyrics and see these performers make all sorts of statements, children need to be reminded by parents that, you know what, that person is an adult. They are expressing their own feelings. You do not have to adopt their feelings and their words to be your own. You need to consider what is right for you and what you believe and who you want to be and how you present yourself. And we could remind our celebrities also, you know, hey, listen, you're a celebrity, you're famous, there are a lot of people looking at you. How do you really want them to see you? And what message do you want to give across? And a lot of celebrities do a very good job of that. But we're all human, and they're human too. So, you know, I think we need to give them some leeway also to just be human, but learn and grow from their experiences and the feedback that they get back from their fans.
Well, as you talk about all this, and I listen, and I'm thinking of some rappers and some lyrics that are very degrading and shaming for a specific gender, and you know, it starts. You know, if our kids are getting their information on how to interact socially that way, that's kind of a bad thing. But when we go as parents to teach and correct, we don't want to use shame, I don't believe.
No.
You know, we want to come from a place of love. And are there some things that you think we could do better, or maybe some parents could take with them as a tool to help them kind of judge how they're moving forward with that instruction?
Yes, I think all instruction towards children should come from a place of compassion and intention to grow from the place that they're at. So some of the things that parents can do are, number one, be compassionate to yourself and be very forgiving of your own mistakes, and be, you know, be ready and open to talk about your mistakes and the way that you think and where you want to go, where parents want to progress to, and what kind of people they want to become. And then go to your child and say, hey, listen, you know, may not have been the wisest thing to say. Did you really mean that? Is that really what you think? And guide them with compassion and try very, very hard not to get frustrated and irritable or angry at children expressing themselves and learning how to navigate through this world.
Okay.
I think that's the biggest thing.
And I think that comes from respect. I mean, love is based off of respect. As we talk with our kids, are there some ways, maybe if you can give us two or three ways that maybe we could help increase that respect in our children, especially with people who they may not agree with?
I think some very basic things, like when we're talking to our children, to sit next to them and not in front of them, to make eye contact with them, to lower your voice and your tone of voice, to be gentle and soft, to have a lot of patience and do a lot of active listening, you know, really listen to what the child has to say and be inquisitive, ask questions. Why did you say that? What were you thinking? What was your intention? How can we say this differently so that it doesn't come out sounding like you're racist? And be very validating and supportive and complimentary to the child. I know that you are a kind, compassionate child. You are my child. I know you're a nice person. I know you want to interact really nicely with other people, and I know that you want to present yourself in a sophisticated, intelligent, and kind way. Let's talk about how we can do that. What else could you have said? And then give some suggestions. I might have said, instead of saying, you know, using labels and putting somebody down, I might have instead described them or describe what they said by what you didn't like. I didn't like when so-and-so said XYZ because it made me feel like I didn't matter. Or, you know, to talk about exactly the specifics of what the child didn't like and how it made him feel. And then ask
and then
help the child express it.
And it sounds like you know, going back, actually make the child take responsibility for how they reacted to that, as opposed to just, you know, this person made me do X, Y, and Z. So
that's another conversation to have is, you know, is to explain to them that when someone behaves in a certain way or says a certain way, they are not responsible for how the child reacts. The child is responsible for how they interpret what somebody else says and then how they react and behave and think accordingly.
Well, I mean, that's really wonderful. And as I'm sitting here thinking, I'm really intrigued about your book. What can you tell us about it as it's upcoming? And do you have a planned target date that it might be available for us?
Yes, of course. It's hopefully it will be published in May, sometime in May. And the target audience are anybody, really, but mostly parents with children in the preteen age group. And it talks about children from about 8 to 13, a couple of teenage scenarios also. But what I want to do is to empower parents to connect with their children and know about what their development is. It's how the child develops psychologically, spiritually, physically, and neurologically, and how parents can use some of the techniques that we use, that therapists and psychiatrists use, to connect to their children and to draw out what they need in terms of what they need for healing from depression or anxiety, and how parents can use all that information and that knowledge to connect to their child and capitalize on that connection they have with their child, optimize it, and then really help their child heal, not just when they take them to see the therapist, but also on a daily basis in their homes. My intention is to help parents and children bond better, have a better relationship, and then heal from their depression and anxiety.
Wow, you know, it sounds like a great tool, and I work with a lot of school counselors and teachers in my day-to-day activities, and it sounds like this could be a good tool for them, you know.
I hope it'll be very helpful, and it'll help people feel good about themselves and good about, you know, each other, and really strengthen that family unit.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on today. I'm looking forward to actually reading your book now. It sounds like something that I could use in my practice and maybe even at home. So I really do look forward to it. And thank you for coming on. And,
thank you. Thank you so much.
Do you have anything you'd like to let our listeners know before I let you go?
Well, I think that, you know, being prejudiced and racist, like, you know, it's such a natural conditioning. So I would like our listeners to understand that we're all human and we have a lot of growth to do. And so as we teach our children how to grow, that we can grow ourselves and then be very hopeful to be better.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Da Silva, and I appreciate you being on our show. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, everybody, we had a great show today. I hope you take the time to look for Dr. Da Silva's book, and it comes out hopefully in May. And look forward to having you guys come back and listen to us for our next show. Don't forget to follow us on mainstreammentalhealth.org and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, as well as LinkedIn. So go to our webpage. You can follow our links there. I really do appreciate you all listening, and remember, life is what happens while you're making plans, so buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram, @MainstreamMentalHealth, Twitter, @MainstreamMENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.